adult person that gives you the right to rock.
The right to rock.
Live at Nightmare Studios, you're listening to the Genghis and Ragman Show, brought to you by therighttorock.com. Horns up. And now get ready for two guys who are so metal, they wear steel-belted shoes. It's Genghis and Ragman.
Was revolutionized by Black Stone Cherry on their brand new record, Magic Mountain.
I've been to a mountain.
I wouldn't say it was magic, though.
Ooh.
God. That was horrible.
It's like I'm in a dream. A bad dream.
Yeah, really bad. Well, you know this cover of this new Black Stone Cherry? It looks like they're in like a... having an acid trip or something. It's all like colorful and shit.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it looks like a little rainbow, it does.
They're the most colorful bastards on earth.
I thought we started the show.
I thought we did, as in, like, where's our video?
I see a screen. John.
It's about all we see.
Where's John?
I don't know. The booth is dark.
Is that a toilet flushing?
Yeah.
Hey, dickhead, I told him that we were starting the show now.
I know. Thanks for being prepared.
I counted down, and he's like, oh. He holds up his hand and shit.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hey, where you been?
Yeah, where you been,
Yeah, we're kind of doing a show.
I had to take care of some business. Had to drop the kids off at the pool, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
What are you, a comedian? You're a comedian now?
A commodian.
Commodian, yes.
Well, did you know I was a third Cambodian?
Oh, Jesus. No, I didn't know that.
No, we didn't know that.
This guy.
Oh, you learn something new every day, don't you, assholes?
Dude, come on.
Can you just hit already? Play?
Just hit the play button.
Done and done.
Oh, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, this is looking a little creepified.
Yeah, you get a little scared. Oh, this is a ghost. Look at the ghost on the screen. No, we're being retarded over here. So that's not politically correct to say. I don't really care. So anyway, no.
You're saying you don't follow that?
I don't follow.
I follow.
Well, in the context we used it. But anyway, to get on to another topic here.
Yeah, I'm sure we're absolved.
You should. We've offended everyone.
We usually do, I think.
We're watching a really cool video. I have never seen it before, but I'm a huge fan of this band, IQ. We're watching their DVD that came out about 10 years ago called Stage.
Oh, okay.
It's a live performance. One's in America and one's in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
But at Nia Fest.
Nia.
Opposed to Fall Fest.
Now, you've mentioned IQ many times.
Yes.
I know you're a big fan of IQ. We used to make jokes about... Because weren't they the ones that had the weird album cover?
They had some really weird album
covers. With, like, the Pope talking to the devil, and he looked like a grasshopper.
That's Impellatory.
Oh, wait.
Impellatory.
No, or is that Thought Industry?
What's wrong with my speech tonight?
Well, who was the one where we said...
Impellatory is the one with, like, the cricket talking to the Pope. He's like, hey, we got a conversation going on over here.
It's because, like, Mr. Cricket meets the Pope. That's the name of it.
Well, you want to play a little Impellatory?
Yeah, why not?
Answer to the Master, I think, is the name of the record.
Nice. Yeah, I guess I was getting confused with, we used to joke back in the, this is back in the day, dude, we used to go to gigs, and I mean, you know, concerts and stuff like at fucking Sam's Boat and shit.
Yeah.
When we would joke about, we said it sounded like fucking insects fucking or something. It was just this crazy, and I thought it was Thought Industry or IQ, one of those.
That was Thought Industry.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah,
so IQ is different. They're not, they're like progressive, like maybe like Spock's Beard or something?
Yeah, pretty much.
Cool. A little mellower. They're not like progressive metal.
Yeah, they're not like Dream Theater.
They're progressive, but not progressive metal. Got it. Okay, cool. I dig that. I'm always looking for some good stuff like that.
Yeah, you'll love these guys. They just had a, part of the reason I kind of got on iKick. I can't even speak tonight. An IQ kick was that they had a brand new record just came out called The Road of Bones.
Ah, okay.
And I've loved these guys for a long time. Actually, I really dug the singer that was the guy for them in the late 80s, early 90s.
Uh-huh.
And so I hadn't got a bunch of their stuff with... Actually, the original vocals came back.
Oh, okay.
After that dude left. But... I dig their stuff, and he's a good singer, too.
Peter Nichols
is his
name. Are they English?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool.
So,
Man, the English love progressive music. You know, like Yes, Genesis, all those classic progressive bands. Except for Yes, I mean, Rush. I mean, every other progressive band from that era that isn't, like, progressive metal.
Right.
They're, like, almost always English. I reviewed an album back... I think it was back in May, I think, of last year. So it was actually almost a year ago. They're called The Custodian. Mm-hmm. Badass band. They got the same kind of sound, just really nice, mellow, Because sometimes you just want, I mean, progressive metal is great, but sometimes you just want regular old, you know, progressive.
That's what I'm saying.
Plain old progressive music where it's just got that nice, beautiful acoustical stuff going on, real melodic.
Mm-hmm.
I like that kind of shit, but with the kind of intricate rhythms.
But this one, these guys have a lot of, like, keyboard layering mm-hmm. and keyboard type stuff going on.
Right.
And the guitar guy, he's got a really nice tone.
Oh, nice.
Really nice tone. He's like, I'm really English, right?
No, he's actually.
I mean,
like,
you just look at him as like they're English as English can be.
I know, right? That dude looks like super English.
So
he
kind of
looks like Peter
guy.
Gabriel, man.
He's like, I got me jumpsuit on. Oh, this like.
And there's the classic John Jowett.
Like, it's funny. It was like, I decided, I thought this was a formal gig. I wore my suit jacket on it.
He's got his. He's like, I was going to be in the Beetlejuice sequel,
shit,
but I got sidetracked.
He's like. My gig with me Beatles tribute band was cancelled tonight.
So I'll do this instead. I'll play with you blokes.
No shit.
Homeboy's rocking the tambourine. He's on lead tambourine, Holmes.
No shit.
Yeah.
I like how they kind of did this and tell you all the band members and the little windows and stuff.
That is
cool. That's kind of
cool. Yeah, that is cool. The video's a little funky. Looks kind of, you know, primitive.
Yeah, spare no expense for the...
No shit. It's not exactly Blu-ray or anything. And also, too, it's not... It's a little cheesy, some of the effects, but it's really, I mean, the music sounds great. And I agree with you. I think that I don't see any reason why you can't treat any sort of video like this, like almost like a movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have, you know, have one guy come in and just like, here's a bass player, just kind of center on him, have his name and stuff, like you're introducing
like
the character.
That. That's cool.
Yeah, just kind of, so you, that way people who don't know the band can still kind of go, okay, I've heard of that dude, or get into it a bit. They're doing some funky kind of old effects with this.
Well, this is 10 years ago, but still 2005 is not that long ago, really.
Yeah.
Think about it. So the Custodian, do you got a good example of what those guys sound like?
Yeah, yeah. How about something off that album? The album was called Necessary Wasted Time. And let me just see, one of these tracks I reviewed that I really said was good. Here, I put it as tracks to play on a cool Sunday morning with the windows open.
Oh, nice.
You know, that kind of nice feel.
Kind of like today was one of those days, a little bit, when the clouds cleared.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And this weekend's supposed to be real nice, too.
Yeah.
But The Man Out of Time, let's hear that one.
Let's do it.
How do I contain all the hours of change? Why do I give in to danger? No one else would bear.
Yeah, see, it's the same kind of sound where you just... I love that. Sometimes you just want to mellow out, man. I mean, I love metal as much as the next guy, but sometimes you're just like, dude, I can groove on some cool melodies. But
The cool thing about IQ, they can get kind of heavy at times.
Yeah?
I mean, not...
They just kind of start jamming and doing a little...
Yeah.
I like that.
It's some darker chords that they use, and I really
D-minor,
think
it's the saddest chord.
It's like, I want to be sad, right? I'm always sad. But no, these guys are really cool.
Play a track from
these
dudes?
Yeah, let's do that. Let's play something off a brand new record. It's really cool. I mean, if you guys are used to be in IQ or you don't know IQ, This new record's pretty cool. It's got two discs, the special edition does. So I would say if you like what you hear here, check some of their stuff out. These guys are really good. Let's go with a song called Ocean.
Dude, we're on a definite progressive tip as we start this episode.
Yeah.
The second episode of the year.
Yeah,
we got a new year. We're grooving it.
Yeah, for sure we are.
We're all up in the thick
show,
of it.
Full show.
That's when I'm gonna start saying it. Where.
So, dude, I'm parched. You?
Totally.
Mr. G, would you help us, please?
Over here. I thought you were going to strain yourself, like pop a blood vessel in your eye or something last time you were doing this. You were just going after it.
Hey, are you all right?
Yeah, I'm fine. Thanks for asking, though.
Don't have to be such a dick.
I'm not being a dick. I'm just annoyed. I want to pour a beer. I'm fucking thirsty. Oh, look at that.
Yeah, you've been mentioning this one. You were real excited. Now, we got to warn you. We're already in the middle of, or not in the middle, but we're already well into the new year.
And go ahead and bust my balls.
You're still fucking touting these these pumpkin beers. This is the funniest part about why you deserve to have your balls busted. Is when I used to try to bring pumpkin beers into the studio, you were like, oh, fucking pumpkin. Like it was the worst thing. Like I was making you drink fucking castor oil or something, man. So it was funny that you would just get all like, fuck that. And now you're like, I just found another pumpkin beer. And I'm like, Jesus, dude, again?
So what are we drinking over there?
No, wait, I got to give you some more shit. No,
no shit.
As you know from our last Kicks and Kisses show, the brew we kind of fucked. That's the first time we tried it. We heard a lot about them. Their legendary Black Tuesday beer is the one. That's the holy grail we've been after. We haven't been able to get it yet.
Now we're after a Mocha Wednesday.
Yeah, the Mocha Wednesday looks even better because it's like the coffee version of it.
I know a guy.
I got a guy who knows a guy. But this is their pumpkin beer from their Preservation Series 2014. The brewery has given us Ignis Fatuus. I know Ignis has to do with ignite, like fire.
Uh-huh.
So I wonder what Fatuus is. But this is supposed to be a pumpkin beer. It's a porter, and it's brewed with pumpkin and spices. So I'm thinking this could be good. Let me I'm anticipating it. I haven't. I've never had this before. You, I guess you have, and that's why you're excited, or you just heard a lot about it. Okay.
No, well, I haven't heard nothing. I just found the bottle. I'm like, done.
You're like running out of there, like the guy in fucking Ocean's 11, where he's like hauling us out of the casino while Take My Breath Away is playing. They
Take
gun his
my
ass
breath
down.
Away.
But anyway, so let's start right away. The label, of course, we do the unofficial labeling.
Oh, yeah.
The label is. Pretty nice. It's brewery does a pretty nice job.
They kind of classy looking.
Yeah, they do kind of a classy thing. They got the nice big bottles. The labels, you know, got a nice orange to it. Some funky font for the name of it, like it's trying to be scary. but anyway, it looks really good. I don't know what this Preservation Series is, but I bet it's got some other good beers.
This this Preservation Series 2014.
Oh, by the way, Ignis Fatuus, for those who are curious, it is, quote, a phosphorescent light that hovers or fits over swampy ground at night.
Oh, okay.
So what you heard, that will-o'-the-wisp, which is supposed to be swamp gas lighting in the night, that's Ignis Fatuus. That's what that is.
Nice. All right, let's do a rating on this.
Yeah,
I'm really
rating
pleased.
Right away. This,
when are you getting through that with the monkey lamp?
Yeah, that's dark as pitch, dude.
Yes.
So we'll give that maybe a 3.5?
Three and a half.
Yeah, it's a nice look. It's got a sudsy lacing, soapy, really. It just kind of dissipates pretty fast.
Yeah, it does.
Let's go for the scent. Aroma?
Ooh,
that's
good.
Nice. Yeah, it's a nice... Definitely a porter. It's like lower on the alcohol. It smells like... It doesn't smell too alcoholic.
A little bit spices, nutmeg-ish, a little bit of the pumpkin.
Yep, digging that. I'd give that, a 3.5? 3.5? I'm down with a 3.5.
I'm liking this so far.
Yeah, this guy comes in at 8.3 ABV, so it's not too high, but for a porter, it's actually kind of high.
It's got a little bit of bite
stout,
to it.
Yeah, stout would be more like a 9 or 10, so let's go into it. Cheers. See what we got here. Got a little bitterness to it. It's funky.
Sour a little bit.
Yeah. Let's see the temperature. I got my trusty thermometer here. Dude, we're like right on it. This is 54.8. So you usually serve these beers around a 55.
Yeah.
54.7.
It's weird, the sour taste.
Yeah, I wouldn't
it.
Have expected that.
Is there any of that wild yeast in it?
I don't think so. According to this, the beer is retired, no longer brewed. But Ignis Fatuus is a special brew created just in time for autumn activities. The base is a rich, robust porter that was brewed with an addition of pureed pumpkins. Like all great pumpkin recipes, we then added a subtle addition of seasonal spices to balance with the roasted character. We invite you to enjoy the nuanced flavors while telling ghost stories around an illuminating jack-o'-lantern. So, really going for a fallish thing, I bet. The spices were probably stuff like nutmeg, maybe a little allspice.
It smells better than it tastes.
Yeah, but maybe that'll change. You know how it is. Usually the first sip isn't the same as the last. But for now, maybe... 2.5, 3? More like 2.5, I think, by the look on your face. I'm not hating it, but it isn't certainly not what we expected. I think we were thinking something sweeter.
I haven't been impressed by any brewery beer I've had.
I know.
This
it makes
is
me
my
worried
third.
For the... Oh, okay. Which
I had the one you said, I don't want any part of that. It was like a maple syrup beer.
Oh, yeah. And that was
And you're like, fuck that.
Oh,
you
really?
Drink it. You told me to.
Oh, so I did try it, and I just didn't
No, you just told me to drink it.
Oh, wow.
I didn't
weird.
Save it for the show.
It
was like an autumn maple, and it wasn't very good either.
That's kind of bizarre.
But you didn't want the maple, so I just did it, and I wasn't impressed.
Oh, okay.
And then we did the last one that wasn't good.
Yeah, the Thai basil was kind of funky.
Yeah.
It was like a salad in a fucking beer.
One's probably the best I've had out of the three, but it's still not blowing me away.
And yet it's still kind of funky. What I'm hoping, I guess, in this case is that, you know, maybe as it warms up or something, the character will change
a bit. You know
what,
though? Once you get in, trying to smell it as you're about to take a drink, you can smell the sour. That's weird, though.
Yeah, there's nothing at all they mention about sour and porters. Well, I guess there are some kind of sour porters, but it's not typically what you expect.
I just was not anticipating this.
And I know you're not a sour guy. I had actually, just for the sake of mentioning it, Ranger Creek out of San Antonio. My brother's a big fan of them, too. I had the batch number 9. They make like in little batches.
Uh-huh.
And they do the wax on the bottle and stuff.
Oh,
and they're little bottles. They're not the big ones. But anyway, this one was a blackberry sour. That motherfucker was sweet, dude. It was good. I enjoyed the shit out of that one.
They're not the same people. Oh, Ranger Creek, they're in the 750s. There's a Cedar Creek. They do cans.
Oh, okay.
And they made a... Oh, God, it was like a Belgian style ale.
Mm-hmm.
Really, it was delicious. Really good. Yeah.
Sounds cool. Well, so anyway, let's finish this up. I guess 2.5, we said, for the...
Yeah, 2.5.
For the taste and mouthfeel. What do you think about
watering.
That?
Just like every other beer I've had from them.
Yeah, it is kind of watery.
Not too, not too, like I say, you don't taste the alcohol so much.
But do you really taste even the porter? Do you taste the roastiness of
the
porter?
That's the thing, I really don't. Yeah, you're right, I don't taste any.
And the sour's getting more full and
prominent, yeah. So maybe on a mouthfeel, maybe a 2.5, 3? 2.5, I think.
2.5.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I can taste a little bit of the toasty notes on the back of the palate.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I see what you mean. I'm starting to taste them a little bit, but way at the back.
Yeah, yeah.
You figure it should be a little more up front.
Yeah, you wouldn't think that. I've never had a sour porter.
Yeah, that's what's weird. I think I have heard of them, that like it's possible that they make those, but it's not a common thing.
Well, so overall rating?
Yeah, let's go overall 2.5.
Yeah.
You know, we may change our minds at later, but
bummer.
I doubt it.
I was looking forward to this one. I mean, I'll drink it. I ain't gonna pour it out. Ain't that bad.
That's the thing. Luckily, it's not that bad. But what were you saying?
Our buddies at Jester King, I found out something interesting about them a while back, and I've been meaning to tell you.
Yeah?
You know how they... And for everybody who wants to tune out, just tune out for the next few minutes. No, anyway, Jester King, the first beer we ever had was a black metal.
Uh-huh.
Incredible Imperial Russian Stout.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Excellent. Then we had the thrash metal that was okay. It was kind of watery, not a lot to it. And then I think we've had a couple others, and they went all sour.
Yeah, for a long time. And I think they still are kind of in that sour mode.
Well, I found out why.
What was that?
Their tanks got tainted, and so it's either, I guess, buy new tanks or brew sour beer, so they just started brewing sour beer.
Oh, interesting.
That's what a guy expects to tell me that.
Really?
Yeah.
I wonder where you heard that. That's interesting.
I'm not sure.
I guess it's smart of them to say, look, I mean, we can either take a hit on this monetarily or turn this into something else, and if people don't buy it, well, then that's our own fault for making a beer nobody wants. But apparently people buy the shit out of it. People love Jester King, especially up in the Austin area.
Yeah.
And I'd love to visit someday. That looks like a beautiful place. Almost looks like a freaking resort up there. So I'd love to check them out. I know my brother visits there periodically.
But anyway. I found that was kind of interesting. That's why I was like, why are they just doing sour? But I found out.
I think that makes sense. That answers a lot of questions. Because I was curious. I thought they were trying to go for a wild yeast thing. In other words, all of their ingredients, they try to grow, source locally. Mm-hmm. Either by local vendors or they grow it themselves. And so I thought the idea was, well, we're able to grow a lot of wild yeast here. It just grows really readily. So I thought maybe they're doing it for that reason. But that
why wouldn't they be able to wash the tanks and get the bacteria out? Unless they just said, we're too lazy to do that, right?
And it's like, oh, we don't even have any soap in the place. We don't wash anything.
No shit.
No, I don't know what the deal was. But I guess, you know, hey, whatever. To each his own.
Well, before we move on to topic, do you want to crank a tune?
Yeah, let's do that.
How about a little bit of Gotthard?
Oh, that'll work.
How about My Belief off their last record, Bang?
Nice.
I think it's funny when you see these bands. These guys look like us. Look at the keyboard guy. He's like,
oh, yeah. He's like the roadie snuck on stage again, like that other show.
He's like, he looks like he could be out in the crowd, like watching the band.
He really does.
All of them, except for maybe.
Well, fucking homeboy over here, Slim, in the fucking
bass.
Yeah, the bass player.
Stripes.
This guy, he thinks he's Phil Collins. It's Bill Collins Holmes, his brother.
Yeah, I think one of the reviews I read was, it's kind of boring to watch, but it sounds great.
I think you're right. So sorry to say, I don't want to rag on him, but it's like, yeah, you just, this is not the most energetic or interesting sort of show to watch. But the music is great. You're right about that. You don't have to check these dudes out.
Oh, yeah.
Are all their albums like this, or is this a progression that they've been leading up to? Like, so I could pick up any one of these albums and be great. Sweet. I'm down with it, dude. I like this stuff.
Yeah. Well, before we jump into the topic, we need to get like some funeral music theme.
Why is this?
The Death of Rage Holmes.
Oh, that's right. You were reading that earlier tonight. Yeah, you were Schmulsky like not happy and, about it.
Peavy have parted ways. Yeah. What a duo those two guys were.
Fuck yeah, dude. And it said because of like musical differences?
Yeah, they just like, oh, I don't like what you're writing now.
I know.
You sucks ass, Rod.
He's like, you know what? Fuck off.
He said, fuck you.
So if you don't like it, it's a bloody door, isn't it?
Yeah, so I gotta say, I'm really bummed.
I know you were a huge fucking Rage fan, dude.
And I just can't believe it's over, Holmes. I saw them in Germany.
That's awesome. I wish I had seen them, dude, because every time you played some videos of theirs, I was like, these dudes are fucking awesome.
Oh, yeah, and dude, Schmoltzky's a fucking monster.
He's ridiculous, dude.
Yeah, so I was like, man, I hate to see bands that I love, and I mean, they've been around, Rage has been around for a while.
Yeah, like, 17 years or something like that?
Yeah.
Long fucking time.
But I just hate to see these bands that are so talented split up. I mean, this lineup was together for 15 years. I think the band's been over 20 years.
Oh, wow, around. That long?
Okay. Yeah.
Damn. It's kind of amazing how much shit has been going by, dude. Like, the new Star Wars coming out. It's like, if you think about it, dude, that's like fucking 40 years old.
That's crazy.
That's crazy, dude. It's like almost as long as we've been alive.
And I guess it's going to be kind of funny, kind of like the new trailers for the Terminator. Where Arnold's coming back as an old man, and he's looking at himself as a young man. And
yeah. When we were young, I don't remember seeing even like old movies. Like, I don't know if you watched The Maltese Falcon or something when you're a kid. It's not like you went, oh, yeah, and there's this other movie that's like 30, 40 years later where Humphrey Bogart's playing the same character again. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Rarely did that happen. Usually they do a remake and someone else plays him.
Right.
But you don't often see that connectivity to it. This is a movie, the original movie, what came out, wasn't like 86 or 84, I think, the original Terminator?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a 30-year-old movie, dude. And now he's back playing himself again 30 years later. Same character, not a dude that looks like him. That's kind of amazing.
Because
usually, like, the actor has already died or is unable to act anymore or has retired or something. You can't get him back, so they end up getting somebody else or doing a different story. They're actually able to connect these stories, like with Star Wars and with Terminator. And get these same dudes back for these old roles. I think that's badass.
I agree.
I get off on that, man. I think that's pretty cool. Little kids will watch and be like, who's this motherfucker? But it's like, no, dude, that's Luke Skywalker, bitch. You watch your fucking mouth.
Well, I tell you what, let's play some Rage before we get topic here.
As a moment of silence, so to speak.
One of my favorite Rage songs ever, Down. You're going.
You know exactly what you've done.
fly, dude. Hopefully, I mean, I guess you'll always have the those DVDs are fucking awesome. The last one you played me where they were in concert, they were fucking all over the place.
I think their last record, they had like a live DVD with it, and then they put out an official live DVD, which I have. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I got that.
That one was pretty sweet.
Oh, yeah. And then Schmoltzky did that thing with Nuclear Blast a few years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that? He wrote all the music, got all these different singers to come in and sing on it.
Yeah, dude.
That was the shit.
He's a powerhouse, Holmes.
A little bit. The guy's a fucking monster on the guitar.
That's the part that's making it awesome.
Oh, yeah. Plays those like two together were just badass, man.
Fuck yeah, dude. It's a shame that that it didn't work out. But I guess, you know, I guess it's always better to have, like, if y'all can't make it work, then better to just part ways so that maybe y'all can go on and start some new shit and keep it going instead of having it limp along and just put out a bunch of shit just to make it feel, it just feels like a cash grab at that point, you know?
Yeah, pretty much.
So anyway, our topic tonight is the box set, dude.
Mm-hmm.
What's the deal with the box set? Let me read a little background info.
What is the deal with box sets?
I don't know why. No, box sets, of course, are when they get three or more discs together. And it can either be like, sometimes it's just about a genre of music, like big band music or something like that, and you get a box set. But usually the way we know it, it's like the retrospective, basically, of or catalog of a particular band.
Right.
And I'm thinking, what's the first really big box set I can think of? Maybe Led Zeppelin, they did one, right? That came out like in the 90s. Mm-hmm. That was like a lot of good shit. Where they go back, and because usually there's some remastering involved, where they go back to the old music, they run it through some high fidelity shit process, and then they come out with like an even better sounding version of it. Which I don't know how I feel about that. I always thought, look, however you wrote that song and put out that song, leave it alone.
Right.
Don't come back and keep changing it. Because what are you gonna do? Write a new chorus because you thought of something better too while you're at it? That's like George Lucas territory.
Right.
You know, don't fuck with what you've already done. But I guess if they clean it up, I guess that's kind of cool.
Well, I mean, just look, we were talking about earlier, they just re-released this Defenders of the Faith remastered.
Right.
30th year anniversary. And it comes, not maybe not boxed, but with two live discs from that era. So, I mean, a three-disc set. So that's kind of a box set, right? Or
I get, yeah. According to the definition of Wikipedia, it's like three or more discs. Uh-huh. I don't know. I doubt they're like got a fucking team on it that's like, wait a minute, this is only two discs. This shit is not allowed to be called a box set.
I won't allow it.
You're banned. No, but seriously though, I mean, like I say, usually there's like the Beatles is a real famous one that came out where they did their entire fucking catalog, soup to nuts, and they did it in both mono and stereo, which
that's
is kind of
cool. Yeah,
and I don't know how I feel about that because even with Jimi Hendrix, a lot of his shit was, I guess you'd call it mono, where basically if like your left speaker blew out, you wouldn't hear half the song.
Right.
You ever notice that? Like on old Jimi Hendrix, it's like that because my speaker's bad in my truck, and I'll be driving, I'm playing some Hendrix, and I'll just hear all of a sudden, let me stand next to your fire. I'm like, wait a minute, where was the opening to that song? But it's all on the other channel, so I don't hear it. So so a stereo, I guess, is where they mix it together. It's all one. It's all in the center, right?
Yeah.
On both sides, left and right. Anyway, the point is, they release in both versions. You can get either one, and they're like, they're usually like $200-$300 to get these things. That's what's crazy about it. It's like, I like this, you know, this band, but I don't know if I'm going to spend that much money on one fuck. What? Although, I guess if you get the box set, I got every fucking album. I don't ever need to get anything else.
Well, that's the thing. It's, there's differences of the different kind of box sets you can get.
And that's the part that really sucks. When you don't know, like, what the fuck is, like, well, this is just the early years, and this is just the later years, and this is the stuff without that guy in the band. You're like, well, what the fuck am I getting?
Well, I remember Rush did theirs. Here a couple years ago. And then they broke it into three stages.
Sector.
Each stage.
Sector 1, Sector 2, and Sector 3. Each one has five albums.
Right.
And then included, because this is actually kind of cool, included in it is a DVD where they pick one song, or is it one album? It might be one album. And then they do that one in full 5.1 surround sound, which I bet with the fucking headphones on, dude, is pretty fucking awesome.
Oh, yeah.
In fact,
yeah.
I've seen some reviews on Amazon where they're just like, dude, this is the shit. I'd like to do that. But again, you know, each one of these sectors is like $150 or something, man. It's like, I don't want to drop $400 or $500. Was it really?
I think it was like $60.
$60 per one? So $180 for the whole. I think you're right, maybe. $180 for the whole set. But still, it's like, dude, I don't know if I'm gonna drop $200 because I mean, want to get it all,
right?
And then, when you do that, it's like, well, then I'll never need to buy any other fucking Rush again. I mean, if a new album comes out and I like it.
And if you think about it, though, if you're getting 5-6 records for $60, it's actually cheaper buying it in the box set than it is singly.
And that's the thing. It's true, but at the same time, how many of us don't own at least, you know what I mean? You usually own one or two of those albums anyway. So it's like, so I'm kind of replacing them, I mean, even though it's the same one. And that's the other thing that I thought about. It's like, well, when you do this, I mean, especially, I don't know if they do digital versions, MP3 versions of these. I doubt it. But if they did, then I'd be like, I might have a problem with that. Because if you think about it, what's the fucking difference between the digital version of this song off this album in this collection versus if I just went and bought the digital song single from somewhere else? You know, it's probably the exact same song. So it's like, so why do I keep having to repay for these songs just so I can have the collection? You know what I mean? If it's no different, because they literally just copy and paste one digital file to another set.
Yeah.
It's like, what the fuck am I, what's going on here? So, but I think they only do it as CDs or vinyl. Sometimes they do it on vinyl.
Yeah, I mean, what's the point of a digital box set?
I know, that's the thing. So I was wondering, it's like, can I kind of put one together myself anyway? Go to Amazon and just buy them all, all the albums separately on MP3?
Yeah, I guess you could.
So that's why I started wondering, is like, does it really matter to have box sets anymore? What are you really getting that you wouldn't get otherwise? I know that they do include a lot of B-sides and rare tracks.
Well, that's what I was
going to say. Outtakes, radio performances, but I never got into that shit. You know, like, there's a lot of stuff. I think I got a hold of that Led Zeppelin box set when it came out. And it had some stuff like, here they are on BBC Radio. And I'm like, the fuck do I care? You know what I mean? What are they doing that they haven't already heard? It's just the live acoustic version or something. But it's, that usually sounds like shit anyway, because they're in a little studio and they're not mic'd up right and all this other shit. So I never really cared. You know, it's like, just give me the songs I heard on the radio. That's the reason I like them, because I heard that song. I want to hear it. I want to own it. So that's kind of cool. I like what they're doing with Rush, just because they do that. That one album on 5.1 sounds pretty fucking awesome.
Well, I bought a few of these over the years. I bought this Kiss one a few years back. And I bought it, I don't know, you and I are, we like a lot of the same music, but we're different in that you're more of a digital guy. I like CDs. I like rare tracks. I like demos. I like that kind of shit. And I don't think you're as into that kind of stuff as I am. But
some of it I am, admittedly.
The Kiss thing was pretty cool because there was some, I guess, original tracks, the way they record them. Then they touched them up and changed some stuff in the studio. Some unreleased demos. And then the Kiss box set came with the Alive 4 record that was never really officially released. So you got that. So you got a bunch of stuff. Because I think the box set was released around the time of the reunion. So they had all four
original members. That's usually why, to kind of drum up.
Oh, yeah.
You know, excitement for the band again and that kind of stuff.
Exactly. So that was cool. Also, a while back, or several years ago, I bought the Cheap Trick box set, which was kind of a nice deal. It comes with a nice little pictorial thing in it and a bunch of CDs, some rare tracks, and stuff like that. So that's where I get suckered in. Especially, I think I got more suckered into box sets where I had the albums on vinyl. And never purchased them back on on CD. So that kind of stuff, it became more beneficial for me to get a box set like that than, I don't know, today, if someone came out with a box set, I don't know if I'd be all enamored about it, especially if I had 5 or 6 CDs of theirs. And
see, that's the thing. Yeah. What I think about it is, for the most part, it's like, well, that's the reason why, we've talked about it before, I used to buy just, if I saw a band, like, typically what would happen is I'd go see a concert, and at the concert I'd see a band that I'd heard about, never really knew much about, and I remember, you know, coming out of the concert and going, wow, I really like that one song they sang. I remember hearing that, but I never really realized it was so badass. And I go, I like them, I want to pick up at least that song, but I didn't want to go, I was like, I don't even know what album that's off of. So I was like, I know what I can do. If it's, you know, say Motorhead, and I was like, I never heard Motorhead before, but I like that song, then all I'd have to do is go to the record store, find Motorhead, get the Best Of CD. It's on there, and then it's got other shit I can listen to, presumably the best of their music. I've got it all in one shot. Instead of going through, you know, 10 albums and only picking 2 or 3 songs I like off each album, I get all the best ones in one shot. It's what I did with AC/DC. I always liked AC/DC, but I didn't own any of their stuff. And then, believe it or not, when Maximum Overdrive came out, they did that Who Made Who CD tape, and I got that, and it was a bunch of old, you know, AC/DC songs. So it was kind of a best of one, and I fucking learned every song on that cassette. I played the shit of it, and I loved it, and I was like, this is great. So what I'm getting at is with the box set, it's you're literally buying every fucking album. It's like, but few people ever like every song on every album. I just why don't I just get a best of and skip this box set bullshit? You know, and then maybe let me buy the rare shit that's only in the box set.
Yeah.
Buy that separately if I want to. See, I don't know if that's better or not. It seems like it is to me, but I don't know. It depends. Some box sets you got to have.
I got to tell you, AC/DC especially, that was a band that I had more stuff either on vinyl or cassette. And just, or it didn't even have it at all. Just, you know, there were songs I liked and, you know, I wanted the full album, just never did it. I mean, they were one of those bands I kind of never... Until, you know, several years ago, a couple years ago, not several, I said, fuck, I want to build up my AC/DC collection.
Yeah.
That would have been a band I said, I got to get a box set because I want all the Bon Scott stuff.
And you know the one to get is Backtracks, right?
And I didn't get that. And there's probably some rare shit. I ended up buying all the CDs individually.
Okay. Oh, wow. Really? Okay.
Well, not all of them, but...
Right. But the ones that you figured...
Well, shit, dude, I just picked up, God, was it Let There Be Rock? Because I wanted to hear a whole lot of Rosie.
Yeah.
And I thought I had the CD with on it. I don't got it. I'm like, I want to fucking listen to a whole lot of Rosie.
And the thing is, a lot of these CDs, you know, you can, if you don't find them used, you can find them pretty cheap somewhere. As opposed to the whole fucking box set, which is like $100 at least most of the time.
You know what a whole lot of Rosie is about, right?
Yeah, it was actually, tell you a funny story, a Bon Scott wrote about a fat chick.
Oh, yeah?
Nope.
Yeah, what do you know?
Yeah.
Okay, look at your head. You got a palm, right?
Yeah.
Get it next to that red light.
Okay.
That's what it looks like you've been beaten off for about 10 hours. Whole lot of rosy, baby.
Yeah, you know a lot.
I know, you seem a little proud of that.
No, it was about a fat chick.
Whole lot of
I heard Angus Young was talking about it.
Oh, cool.
He's like, he wrote that about a fat chick. He was like trying to bang over the Barbie. It's like an English Australian thing I'm trying to do.
Yeah, because they're like, they're Australian, right?
Yeah.
And Bon Scott was English or was he Australian?
Australian.
I think Brian Johnson is English.
Oh, Brian Johnson. Hey, Brian, how you doing?
What's he doing up there?
What's he doing in the booth while you're in the audience?
I know.
It's weird.
It's almost like we messed up.
No shit. Hey, John, can you send him down?
No, he's shy.
He's already gone.
He's been on the show before. Why would he be shy?
He ducked out for fish and chips.
He's hanging with any truck up here.
Okay.
Oh, okay. That just explains everything.
Yeah, I'll have to gas the booth.
So, anyway, back to box sets. I'm actually looking at something, and I didn't even know about this, but it makes total sense, the Iron Maiden box set, where they came out, and it was funny. You look in the library, and if you look at some of these Iron Maiden albums from a few years ago that were remastered, they all picture Eddie. If you can come around here and see that over there.
Oh, okay.
And
that's
I have
sweet.
Them. And I didn't realize it, but all the remastered ones in this box set, they make the picture of Eddie off the first Iron Maiden record.
I like that. I like when that is a cool thing that you get with a lot of box sets, and that is that they do something. They're kind of interactive, and I like that shit. Like the best one, I think, is probably Backtracks by AC/DC, because it came in a deluxe version and a standard version, and... The deluxe version actually came that the box itself had an amp in it, a working amp.
Oh, it worked?
Yeah. Fuck yeah. You can plug into it and put your guitar to it.
Did you ever see the Priest one?
Uh-uh.
And the reason I bought the Priest one is it came with the Screaming for Vengeance MTV concert.
Oh, no shit.
And it's in a box with, like, studs around it.
Oh, nice.
Little studs.
Sweet.
And it had a bunch of, like, demos and... unreleased tracks in it, and that was the reason I bought it, but mainly for the DVD. Here, I'll show you. And a cool book.
It's checking it out over there.
It's called Metallogy, right?
Fuck yeah, that looks nice. I like a good packaging. Don't fucking half-ass it.
Yeah.
So when that? They give you, like, you know, photos and a bunch of shit, then it kind of feels special. So it's like, if you're going to fuck me for all that money, you might as well be some good shit out of it.
Yeah, it's like a best of with some unreleased tracks and then a live DVD.
Is it all remastered?
In a book. Yeah, everything's remastered.
Oh, nice.
Some classic pictures of the band back in the day and all that.
Can you actually tell the difference in the remaster? Most of the time I can't. Yeah, it's like I don't notice the difference.
Sometimes
I'm,
that's kind of cool, though.
It's got,
right?
Like the little, yeah, little studs on it.
Metallurgy, right.
You feel like a metal god, Holmes? No, what I like is the, I want to mention before we go out, the Rush sector box sets were pretty cool. I liked those. You put all three together, like you were saying, and it forms like one of those cases that the roadies pack all the shit in. Mm-hmm. And it's got the three members on it. Each one has one of the guys in the band, their picture on the spine. And you put them all together. It's like this standing together for a band picture, right?
Right.
Nice. Rammstein did Liebe ist für alle da, which came out in 2009. That was a limited edition deluxe box set. And it featured a special edition album. You could either get the censored or the uncensored version. Came with handcuffs, lubricant, and six pink dildos that were supposed to reflect the relative, supposed to be based off the dicks of the actual guys in the band. And I'm like, sure it was.
Yeah, so I'm guessing you got one.
I didn't.
No, my dick wasn't in that one.
No, I'm saying I bet you ordered one.
No, I didn't want my dick in it. It wouldn't fit in the box. It's freaking you out, isn't it? It's kind of blowing your mind, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm speechless.
For once.
No shit. Thank God. Thank you, Genghis.
No, but anyway, I mean, I just thought those are some of the more notable. I mean, there's others that are non-metal, like Miles Davis, apparently. They did one that had his whole collection with, I can't remember, the Columbia or whoever he was with.
Yeah.
It's like 52 albums or something.
Holy shit.
All in one box set.
Wow.
It's gigantic. So there are sets like that where it's just an amazingly large number. There's some band I've never heard of. Mertz Box, or Mertz Bow was the name of this band, and they did one called the Mertz Box. It was a 50 disc set.
Holy
in
shit.
Which 20 of the discs are of new material and 30 discs were catalog material.
Oh, wow.
Like, what the fuck? You Holy had that much material that just wasn't even out?
Yeah.
So I guess you were kind of getting new shit out of them, like a whole career's worth.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
It's kind of wild.
Did he die or something?
I don't know anything about these guys. Never heard of them, but
I got a Journey one that was cool with some unreleased stuff.
See, I don't mind the unreleased. Some stuff unreleased isn't so great. But what was cool, I do remember in the Led Zeppelin one that came out in the 90s, the first one, that one came out with a single, Traveling Riverside Blues.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of my favorite Zeppelin songs. I was like, when I heard that, I was like, that sounds badass. It's like an old blues song, like I think it might have been a Robert Johnson song or something. But.
Well, I heard a bunch of the old Zeppelin stuff was this stuff that he'd stole from blues guys.
Oh, that's all Zeppelin was.
Yeah.
I mean, same with Rolling Stones. When they started out, they were basically nothing but just pure blues. Like John Mayall and the Bluesbreakers and all those guys. England loves the blues, dude. They ate that shit up. So all these guys started out that way. I mean, Clapton did a whole album that was nothing but Robert Johnson tunes as a tribute to Robert Johnson. So anyway, I guess we pretty much talked about that topic. The bottom line is I'm not opposed to the box set. I'm not sure of its relevance anymore. Basically, at this point, everything is digitized. You can get it just about whenever you want. Have it whenever you want. Have it on demand. You can listen to it
Everything's
on Spotify
on demand
or something.
Yeah,
you don't even need it.
Yeah.
So what do you really need to carry all this shit around for? If you ask me, it's like just release the rare shit or the remaster, you know, whatever the special shit is. Release that separately as its own sort of collection on its own.
Mm-hmm.
If I probably already own most of these albums. I don't need to own them again.
Right.
Even if they're remastered where I can't really tell the difference. But now the Red Sector ones, you know, I mean, the Sector ones with Rush, getting that 5.1 might be worth it. If they release those separately, I'd buy those.
But yeah, the reason I bought what I bought those was I just had all that stuff on vinyl. And
yeah,
I didn't have it on CD. So I
yeah,
said,
if you don't already own it, I could see getting stuff like that. That'd be fine with. But anyway, what, you want to jump into some classic?
Classic.
For some reason, I don't even know why I thought about this guy out of the blue. It's like, dude, I hadn't heard Aldo Nova in forever.
Oh, wow. Love
it. And I always dug that track, Monkey on Your Back.
There you go.
From the Subject record.
Uh-huh.
I guess it was a second record.
Uh-huh.
You want to play a little Aldo Nova?
Fuck yeah.
Let's do it. Paisan, you got a classic over there.
Yeah, yeah. Since we were mentioning these old bands and their stuff, I mean, I was thinking of Scorpions the other day. One of my favorite albums, probably nice. My favorite album by the Scorpions is Blackout.
Oh, nice.
Fucking love that album, dude. So I was thinking maybe Can't Live Without You.
Oh, I love that track, dude. Well, Scorpions...
Appreciate Tracy G's little intro.
Yeah, that's the shit. We hadn't even brought that up.
We've been digging it.
Yeah, yeah, totally. I mean, Tracy's, we've already said he's a fucking man.
He is. He's clearly
the man. He's a fucking man, I tell you.
So, you got some new shit you've been listening to?
Yeah, actually, there's a few things I'm getting ready to probably do some reviews on. Mm-hmm. But one thing that's really been kicking my ass is a new Udo. We'll be featuring a video from them here in the near future. But his new record's called Decadent. And it's so funny. This guy, I think Udo's close to 70 now.
Is he really?
Yes.
Jesus.
I forget. I think when we interviewed him on the last record, he was having a birthday and he was getting up there in age. I don't remember exactly what his age is, but he ain't the youngest guy in the world.
What you saying?
But he still sounds great. I mean, granted, he kind of screams when he sings, but a 70-year-old guy doing that?
Yeah, the fact that he's even... I mean, shit, the fuck that he's... The fact that he's standing. You know?
Well, you know,
I
mean, what the...
I hope I'm standing at 70.
The thing that blows me away, if you look at a guy like, say, Udo Dirkschneider.
Sure.
And I don't know how old he is. I mean, we'll check the archives here shortly, but... Say he's 70, and then I look at my dad at 73. I'm thinking,
why aren't you doing this?
I honestly don't think my dad could be doing this.
No, probably not.
And I was wrong. He's 62.
Still, he's almost retirement age, this guy.
Yeah, yeah. He was born in 1952.
Damn.
So, well, that doesn't seem right. He must be 63, right?
63, okay. 63 is fine.
Get your calculator out.
Yeah. I'll use some Chisholm Bob Holmes.
So, anyway, I mean, the guy just still sounds badass for his age. And this new record's phenomenal so far. I mean, I really dig a lot of the stuff I heard on it. Some of his stuff he gets, and I haven't heard the whole record yet, but he does throw in some kind of weird shit from time to time where he does like a German folk song or something like that. And you're like, I don't know why that's on there. But this one song I'm really digging is called Speeder off the brand new record.
Nice.
Let's go with that. Payson, what do you got over there?
Over here, I got some, you know, kind of bring things more mellow.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about the IQ, and we're jamming to some of that progressive stuff. This is more on the side of that, you know, that kind of groove oriented stuff. More like basically stoner metal kind of a deal.
Yeah,
that real progressive but stoner kind of deal. I mean, they describe them as instrumental cosmic rock quartet.
What?
They're from Sweden. Sweden, what their cool thing is
Sweden.
They tend to lately be sort of the trendsetters in music, and I like that.
I agree.
And so their new thing is they're saying, hey, let's get into this. We already did the retro thing, that 70s shit, after doing, you know, making melodic death metal and stuff. We got bored with that, so now we went backwards. So now they're moving ahead a little bit, and they're getting into that kind of like Trouble and those kind of bands where they're more just kind of mellow and tripping out, or East of the Wall. But these guys are a little more mellow than that. In either case, I love the instrumental stuff more often than not. And these guys have an album out. They're called My Brother the Wind, and they're running for the longest title of the year already. Mm-hmm. And it's called Once There Was a Time When Time and Space Were One. And I was like, that took like two or three lines just for the review to write. So anyway, I'm really digging these guys. They're really kicking ass. And I let's give you a taste of them with Songs of Innocence Part 1.
Let's do it.
We'll be right back.
That's interesting. Anathema does the same sort of thing. We'll have like, this is called The Distance Part 1, Part 2, Part 3. I'm like, what the fuck?
It's like, get it done.
I know, finish it.
Like they just, I love they're Anathema. So stoned, they just forget where they are.
It's like, we're all like,
it's like, are we still playing the same song? So I don't remember. Just call it Part 2.
No shit.
They don't know.
It's like, I don't know what to name it, Ron. But I got to say, I mean, off the Anathema Weather Systems record, they have the Untouchable Part 1, the Untouchable Part 2.
Mm-hmm.
And dude, just great songs. And on that live DVD we saw, forget about it. It was just awesome to watch, too. And I got the Metal Munchkin into it.
She's digging it.
She loves that. She goes, Daddy, we got to do a duet. She wants to start playing guitar. And nice. I'm like, I can't sing like Holmes. She's like, I can sing both parts then. I'm like, okay, whatever.
She's already just disappointed. Like, you really fucked up.
She's like,
this could have been special, but thanks, Pop.
Dad, you disgust me.
I'm sick of this.
So, no, it was really cool stuff, though. I like the Anathema a lot. You know that. So.
For real, man.
We want to thank you for our listening, helping us get through another year over there.
Mm-hmm. Special shout out to our pal.
Cat Daddy.
Yeah, Cat Daddy on his Facebook page. He was like, you guys are the shit. And I was like, thanks, dude.
We do our best. We do what we can.
We just tell him, we do it just for you.
Just for you.
Everybody else, fuck them.
But you. Everybody but you.
You're the guy. We tell that to everybody who
does. Exactly. So anybody that you really like us, this is for you. We love you, but fuck everybody else.
No, but seriously, I guess we're happy to be jamming in a new year. We're looking forward to some new shit. And whenever we find something cool, we'll be definitely bringing it to your attention.
Damn straight.
Well, I guess that's it. And there it is.
We want to give you two big
holds up.
With the metal queen, Miss Doro Pesh. Give it up, people. Doro, how are you today?
Hey, very good, very good. I'm so excited to go on tour again. Like next week we're starting, and I'm already, I'm on fire, let's put it that way.
That's awesome. Well, let me ask you a question. Raise Your Fist has been out for a while, and you're still touring. Is the album still doing that well, where you're able to do some more touring behind it?
And it's doing still really well. I'm so excited and happy and we are in the middle of doing another DVD. It's for the 30th anniversary, and it will be probably 6 or 7 hours of live stuff, like the whole year of the 30th celebration. And then this will come out in autumn, and the new record, we probably will start by the end of the year. So for a new record, it will probably take another year. But so Far Away, So Fist is still doing great, and the record company was putting out another a limited edition with another bonus CD. There are 9 tracks on it. Some of our favorite songs we recorded. And yeah, it's still doing good, yeah.
Well, I think it's awesome for an artist like yourself. And we recently interviewed Udo Dirkschneider. And I mean, for you guys that have been doing it 30 plus years and then putting out a solid product like Raise Your Fist and being able to tour a couple years behind it in the U.S., which is probably one of the toughest markets in the world right now, my hat's off to you. Congratulations for a great record.
It's so nice to hear, Abe. Thank you. It's always so much joy to play the new songs. They tie in really great with all the old Warlock stuff. I don't even feel any difference between the Triumph and Agony record back then, my favorite Warlock record, and the Waste of Fist. I think those are good and goes over life really well, really well, yeah.
Well, speaking of the new record, and I know we briefly talked when it came out a while back, but I mean, how many tracks are you doing live? I'm a big fan of Cold Hearted Lover. Just a phenomenal song as well. How many tracks are you doing off the new record, and what's one of your favorite ones to play live right now?
Actually, we change our set list almost every day, but Raise Your Fist, the title track, that's always in it, and it really reminds me on All We Are. It has like so great potential. Everybody's like raising a fist and singing along. It has so much energy. Because it's fast, sounds very old school, but it's pretty nice. And then the song for Running Against Dio, Hero, I always ask it to that either Hero or we play Egypt, the Running Against Dio song. So I always leave it up to the fans, because they can call us when they want to hear that night. These three, they're always in the set. usually the song I think with Lenny is rehearsed, but the last song after is a bow, and then we have it on tape because Lenny isn't there. And, like, I, yeah, that's a nice ending of the show. It touches people's heart, and it's like, wow, it's one of my favorite songs, like the Lenny duet, it's rehearsed. I've never played it live so far, yeah.
Oh, you have it. That's interesting. No. So you're doing Hero at, towards the end of your set?
You were a hero, our only hero. You were a hero for everyone. You were a hero, our only hero. You were a hero like no one, like no one. Like a rainbow in the dark, you put meaning in our hearts. Fantasies, kings and queens, yeah, you meant the world to me. With your voice so strong and sweet, you were the mystery. No, we'll never let you go, and we wanna let you know that in our hearts, deep in our hearts, you were a hero, our only hero. You were a hero to everyone.
Yeah, well, hero, or sometimes Egypt. Yeah, sometimes when I hear, then I compass for Egypt, but usually we do hero, and then I always, you know, tell the fans how much we love and miss Ronnie, and it's so great when there are young fans in the audience, you know, and sometimes people say, man, we never had a chance to see him. The diehards were always metalheads, I all know, but yeah, like metalheads who are now 14, 15 years old, they never had a chance to see him, and then we always, like, you know, play it, and then, you know, and then you really see the Dio chants, like, everybody, Dio, 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 and it's like, oh, great, you know, and then, yeah, it's very emotional. It's the metal spirit, like, the true metal spirit.
Well, you know what, I think I've told you this before, and I'm very critical of covers, but mm-hmm. your cover of Egypt, the Chains Are On, oh my goodness, you did such a justice to that tune, and I believe you had told me that Ronnie had given you some accolades after he'd heard your version. Correct me if I'm mistaken, but I think he was pretty happy with it too.
Yes, no, you remember that, right? It was in 1999, 2000, and I was at the release party of Ronnie James Dio's Magica album, and then, you know, I wanted to say, hey, the record sounds great, congratulations, all, and then he came up with a big hug. Oh, I want to tell you, I love your brand of pieces, and really, and it was like, oh man, it felt so great, and love singing that song. It's always like, wow, you know, it's a big honor to sing that song, and to feel run through it, and man, you know, so, yeah, I still love singing that song, and
You know, another thing too that you tend to do on your records, the last few records, is you've had some guest stars. You've done, you know, like you said, the ballad with Lemmy. You've done some stuff with Udo. You just had Gus G on your recent record. On this new one, have you got any ideas? Are you going to have some more guests come on to the record you're going to be working on here shortly?
Yes, definitely. I love working with great people. People I grew up with, or I was a fan. It's for me the highlight of every record. And yeah, so far, I don't know who it will be, but I can promise it will be probably some great people. Maybe something totally unexpected, but fucking great. And yeah, but I don't even know how to top it. Like when you sing with Lemmy, you know, it's like, wow, that's is so awesome, and Lenny's one of my best friends, and I think the coolest guy in metal. I love him so much. So yeah, but I will definitely come up with something, and yeah, and it's always my favorite tracks on the record when I have a guest somehow bring so much magic to the song. Yeah, it's very special. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what, the interesting thing, and I mean, I don't know this for sure, but I'm sure you'll confirm that for me here now, but you seem like you're as much of a fan. I mean, you're an iconic artist. You're one of the, you're at the forefront for metal for women. And you seem like you're as big a fan as you are just a musician doing, I mean, loving what you do, making music, but you seem like just an honest to God, just major metal fan, which resonates through your music as well, you know?
I'm a total metalhead. I'm a total metal fan. I love, you know, in concerts, I'm, you know, like, when I'm at a festival, for example, in Wacken or something, it's like, you know, in the crowd, it's possible. I'm still a big metal fan, and I'm just to belong to that metal family. It's like, it's awesome. And every night, getting the stage, it's a privilege, a big honor to, you know, to connect with people, make people feel good, and to, wow, give it your all. Yeah, it's, yeah. And I love music, you know, and the fans.
I can really tell when you're talking about working with Lemmy and the folks you've had the opportunity to work with. It's like, oh my God, I'm working with my idol here. That's got to be pretty surreal.
Yeah, it is. It is. I was just last weekend, I had a little guest appearance on the Saxon show, and I love Biff and Saxon. I think they were one of the bands when I grew up. It was like, wow, it was like the ultimate, the best songs, and they just had their 35th anniversary, and then I was the guest on Denim and Leather, and this is always coming up on stage when we did our anniversary shows, and it was great, and I thought, man, you know, I watched the whole show, it was a long show, and then I heard all of the songs I grew up in the 80s, and I thought, that's what I love about metal, is something so profound, so meaningful, so metal about it, and yeah, and I'm still like, I enjoy every show, my band, my friends, my colleagues,
Well, I'm just going to put a bug in your ear because you just mentioned something. You need to do something with Biff. How awesome would that be?
Yeah, actually, we did. It's coming up on the new DVD. We actually did stuff together, and he was great. It's happening awesome. So we'll see it. It's so cool. Biff is on the DVD, and Bodo Dirkschneid, Hardy, Hansi Kirk of Blind Guardian, and Biff Caffrey, and great ladies of metal are coming on, and it's awesome. Max Rossi of Focus, and everybody is there, all the people you know and you like, and yeah, and doing something with this, that's awesome.
Well, Dora, how do you see the current state of metal right now? I mean, as far as women are concerned, back when you were getting started, it was, please don't take offense, kind of taboo to have a woman in metal. I mean, it's everyday commonplace anymore. Are you pretty happy? I mean, you started this movement a long time ago for the women. You, and I guess most notably, may be Lita Ford behind you, but what do you think about the state of metal and how it's developed and how more women are involved in metal bands?
I think, man, at the moment, it's great. It's in a great state. I think tons of fantastic female singers or musicians out there. I think I was, you know, so in love with metal and the fans. Me, it never mattered. I never felt any different. You know, I was a metalhead. Just a female one, and I think nobody else. It's so odd. So sometimes in the press, but always, you know, how it is about being a woman in metal. But I always felt great. I was always treated really good by all the other bands we toured with. But I thought, well, yeah, with Judas Priest, Ronnie James Dio, or Wasp, or Megadeth, it was always not. People I never felt that the blacks or something or different. I was really comfortable and yeah, and just when you feel the power of metal and you know it's all it takes and you go and never thought it was also different. So, but I think now many more women, and I remember once yesterday was actually one of my favorite festivals. 1986, the Monsters of Rock Festival in England, Catalan, was actually the biggest day in our life because after that, so many doors opened and we could go to America and tour the world. And I was, I think, the only woman backstage. There were like 500 guys, so I was the only girl, and that was actually so funny. And I was a little bit lonely, but it was cool. Now it's all now backstage. It's a good mix, and you know, and I love women, I like men, I like everybody, so I think it's good that it's like, you know, it's not balanced. And I think it looks really beautiful when a woman's out there, but sexy, I think, wow, I'm a boy, it's very, very good, yeah, and I think, in day and age, people, they respect it much more. The women, they're very, strong personality, so it's not even anymore like, you know, big deal to be a woman. Like, it's cool, but, you know, it's not anymore like, you know, that you're so alienated. It's all good.
That's killer. Well, just back to the tour here, you got just a short round of dates in the States. And then after that, is it going to work on the new record after you finish this round, or more touring?
We do more work on the DVD. I would love to have it come out in autumn. Work title is Strong and Proud, probably 30 years of, you know, Strong and Proud, something like this. And then we start a new record, yeah, probably next year. We have some new songs in the making, so I think I'm already really happy. There's some killer tunes in the making. And yeah, and then non-stop touring. Lots of festivals, and then from the America tour we go to do a cruise, the Full Metal cruise, and then Russia and Europe again, and I hope we can come back in September to the States. And then I heard I was invited to Rock in Rio in Brazil by another band, Angra.
Oh, nice.
And and then doing some more stuff, and I want to create a new show, maybe in the Mad Max style, like, you know, visually. We're just working on that. Yeah, and then actually staying live to me is the most important, and sometimes, you know, it takes them a little bit longer to have another record coming out, but yeah, but playing live is, yeah, to me that's everything. So new record probably next year, and it's too early to say, and
One last question. You've been doing it for 30 plus years. It doesn't look like you're slowing down one bit. It looks like you're just busier than ever. Do you see yourself ever slowing down at this, or you just have so much drive and passion for the music that you're going to do it till you drop?
Yeah, I probably die on stage, and I guarantee that. I feel totally on fire, actually more excited, more on fire than in the early 80s. And I want to do it maybe 20, 30 more years. And I think I have many, many more records and songs in me. I hope the fans will love. And yeah, and then non-stop touring, that would be awesome. And juicing up people with positive energy. That's what I love. I think that's my destiny. It will not change. So I'm totally into it. I'm totally dedicated to metal, more so than ever. And I just made myself a nice tattoo that was for the 30th anniversary, and on my right arm, and it says, "The one who loves the fans, the Immer." Immer means forever. That's the German translation. Yeah, I'm slowly into it, and I will never ever stop as long as the fans want to see it, hear it.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, Dora, before we let you go, is there anything you'd like to tell the fans out there?
Oh, yeah, man. Hey, my dear friends, I love you to death. You know that. And, you know, I'm so happy to see you soon, to see you on tour. I will give it my all. We are all tight. The band is ready. It's like a well-oiled machine.
And yeah, and we will give you more metal power than ever. And I'm so happy to see you. And I wish everybody the best. Stay heavy, stay healthy, and keep metal alive.
Dora, alas, I lied to you. I have one more question, if that's okay.
Yes, of course, of course.
Just regarding the set list, with your catalog, how difficult is it to prepare a set list and then coming to America, how do you alter it? Do you have to mix in some more older Warlock stuff, or do you kind of keep it steady throughout every country you travel in, or is it constantly changing due to the different regions?
Yeah, actually, I always change it every night. I always play according to the fans, and for some fans, sometimes they drive or fly or they travel with us, so they will always be guaranteed to never see the same show. So we will always, play different songs, and sometimes I changed it a little bit because there were so many records they didn't get released in America in the 90s. So sometimes then I think, it's not no point in playing too much stuff when people don't know it. Even though I think there were some great records, great songs, but I stay away sometimes from the releases which haven't been released in America. So I keep pretty much the old school stuff in the set. Lots of stuff of the Triumph and Agony album, and lots of old school stuff like, of course, Burning the Witches and I Will Rule and stuff like that. All We Are, and then usually we play the Wacken anthem. It's called We Are the Metalheads. That's always fun for the fans. I sometimes hope fans will come on stage, and I know sometimes with security it's a little bit tricky, but sometimes they will find a way. And and then we do some stuff like Revenge, Raise Your Fist, and in the encore we can always call out the songs they want to hear. We are prepared so everybody can hear their favorites if we haven't played it in the set, and we will play as long as we can, as long as there's no curfew. We can play 2.5 hours straight. And,
that's awesome.
Yeah, and then some, of course, some surprises and some new songs, but all with the highlight of each record, except the ones we put out in the 90s. Sometimes people don't know it, but sometimes the diehards, they know it. They got like the simple, expensive imports, and then they request it, and they think, oh, so nice. The diehards, they probably know the whole catalog. But each city is different, and each club, and when I feel there are more metalheads, then I keep more metal. When I feel there are more people who want to hear anthems or some ballads, I put the ballads and the anthems in, whatever it takes to make this night unforgettable and something what people really say, man, I was the best show I've seen in a long time. That's always like what we try and what we strive for.
Well, I gotta go old school on you, and then I promise I'll let you go. But one of the earlier records, I think, is one of the first ones went after you left Warlock, the one you did with Gene Simmons. I love that record.
I'm so happy you say that. Oh, cool, man. Yeah, it was for the best experience, and I was a Kiss fan, and still in the Kiss arms. I never ever would have thought that I would ever meet Gene Simmons, and let alone to work with him in the studio for months and months, and it was so awesome. I still love that song, Unholy Love. It was the song, and I heard it and I said, oh, she stop it, I love it, I want to have the song. And he said, really, you love it so much. I said, man, I love it so much. And then he said, oh, yeah, you can do it, you can sing it. And that was actually awesome.
I gotta tell you, my favorite song off that record is probably Something Wicked This Way Comes.
This Way Comes, man, we haven't played that in a long time. That's a good one. Yeah, okay, I gotta tell the guys, alright. Yeah, tons of songs, and yeah, we could play 10 hours, I think we still wouldn't play every single one, which.
Awesome. Well, Doro, thank you so much for your time today. Thank you for coming back onto the RightToRock.com on the Genghis and Ragnar show. As always, it's an honor to talk to you. You want to tell the fans to go out and get Raise Your Fist and catch Doro on tour if you can. Doro, thank you so much.
Get the Raise Your Fist. There's the limited edition Raise Your Fist and Powerful Passionate Favorites. It's another bonus CD with 9 tracks. It's awesome. So, and and I hope I see you on tour live. That's always what I enjoy the most. And thank you for your support. You were so kind. And yeah, and thank you, Metalheads, all over. I will see you soon. And yeah, we will do a great night. I already feel that. Yeah, I feel that in my gut.
Awesome. Well, Doyle, again, thank you so much. I look forward to hopefully seeing you here in Houston.
Yes, yes.
Listen to the Gigs and Ragman Show. We hope you check out our website at therighttorock.com, where you can find CD, DVD, and Blu-ray reviews about your favorite music and other interesting bits of metal and beer-related info. And feel free to drop us a voicemail on our hotline at 937-387-8732, because we promise to put you on the show no matter how much of a mama luke you are. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to us on iTunes, leave a review, tell your friends so we can spread the word. Our show's posted on a regular schedule, but we average a couple a month and hope to be adding additional content soon. And above all, please check out the artists we play on the show and support good music wherever you find it by buying it from your favorite merchants, including the amazing Tracy G, who writes all of our original theme music. You can find him online at TracyG.com. That's for you, brother. That's it, and there it is. I'm your announcer, Joey Clams, reminding you that until next time, drink good beer, keep those horns up.